One of the big questions going forward in the search for alien biospheres on exoplanets, something we can now just begin to do with James Webb, is exactly what gases actually indicate a biosphere. The problem here is that most gases that life on Earth produces are not exclusive to life. Things like methane and sulfur dioxide are very much also produced by geologic processes, and on their own are not good biosignature gases. Yes, sulfur dioxide is produced by biology, but most places where it's found in the solar system, it is not. Thus, it will never be proof of a biosphere on its own. Volcanoes produce it, industry produces it, photochemistry of sulfur produces it, it's everywhere, and it's also responsible for the smell of an extinguished match. Very pungent, but very common outside of biology, and is a prominent outcome of the chemistry of sulfur, of which the universe has no shortage of. And that's the huge problem. Biology is nature, so are volcanoes and chemical processes, and they often all produce the same gases. The trick is in finding those gases which biology produces that are harder for nature to produce, and then look and see if there is a second independent gas that also makes somewhat little sense in its context, and then go from there. Gases where the levels are unexpected, a disequilibrium, for the environment that they are in. Often they need to have a mechanism that can replenish them that seems unlikely without the intervention of something else, such as life. One of these is oxygen. Take Earth's biosignatures. Earth has a whole lot of oxygen, and it is predominantly being put there by the plants. The problem is, it's always been suspected that atmospheric oxygen, even a lot of it, isn't actually a great biosignature without other independent gas disequilibriums to back it up. Yes, oxygen is reactive and must be replenished somehow if you see it, but we don't actually know all of the ways that it can happen. And indeed, a new one has surfaced. More on that in a bit. And it carries some very serious implications in the search for life. And then there is the universe. When we look at places where oxygen can better preserve rather than in the atmosphere of a planet, instead, looking at a nebula in deep space, we see a whole lot of oxygen that was not produced by biology. The universe has no problems or qualms about producing this relatively light element. It's when you see a group of gases that the universe doesn't usually make so easily that you start to move into territory where you could ask questions about biology in an exoplanet atmosphere. But it must be remembered here, life doesn't solely exist on land or the air on this world, but the ocean too. Excitingly, we are entering that period of time where we can characterize exoplanet atmospheres, though we're just at the start of it. So now for the oxygen news that no one knew was happening until relatively recently. The find is known as dark oxygen, and what it comes down to is the production of molecular oxygen, O2, the important component of what you're breathing. Some biology on Earth, such as us, love this molecule because of the high reactivity of oxygen makes for a great energy source. For the anaerobic microbial life on Earth, which was Earth's earliest life, however, it is toxic. The plants poisoned the earliest life on Earth, though it still has a large domain in areas where there is no oxygen, especially deep below the Earth. Another such oxygen-poor environment is the deep sea, though it's not as poor as we once thought. We'll get to that. But there are other ways environments can get oxygen beyond plants. Oxygen to some degree can be produced abiotically in aquifers. This is interesting. So what happens here is that radioactive decay in the surrounding rocks of an aquifer can actually break down water molecules and release O2. You can also see it in geology when the chemistry of silicon-bearing rocks, quartz being a good example, produces it. And then there's plenty of silicon in terrestrial planets. And there are a ton more reactions that can release oxygen, which is a huge reason why it's not a biosignature on its own. You can even have situations where biology will produce dark oxygen without photosynthesis, and this can even happen to a degree in otherwise anaerobic environments. But throughout this, it was always presumed in science that the amount of dark oxygen produced by the various processes on Earth that aren't photosynthesis was negligible. It did not seem enough to do much other than contribute a minor trace. This view is changing, though, as more methods of oxygen production are being identified. It may be more important than we had previously thought. And that takes us to the ocean floor. In a paper by Andrew Sweetman and colleagues, perhaps ominously titled Evidence of Dark Oxygen Production at the Abyssal Seafloor, link in the description below, they detail a new and rather unexpected way of oxygen production that actually also involves an active area of mining and technology, but strangely converges with the question of evolution and abiogenesis. This is strange. About 12,000 feet below the surface of the ocean, very deep indeed, it is truly pitch black. The sun does not reach that far down, which means no photosynthesis can happen, which means no plants producing oxygen. Strangely, however, there is oxygen to be found there, and no one really knew why until now. The area in question where this was first seen in 2013 is called the Clarion-Clipperton Zone in the Pacific. This area is interesting for a number of reasons because there actually is life there, and a lot of it, much of which we didn't even know about until 2016, with many more species there that remain unknown and are yet to be discovered and cataloged. It was thought that this should be depleting oxygen as the organisms there use it up, which led to a prediction of a decrease with depth, and that's not what they saw. Instead, there was a mysterious rise in oxygen where it should not have been. Initially, the finding wasn't trusted, and the researchers went through a long process of checking their sensors before conceding that the readings were correct. There was unexplained dark oxygen deep below the surface of the ocean. In 2021, they returned to the area for a different reason, to survey the seabed. The reason is mining. This area contains nodules containing some extremely useful industrial metals. Once again, they detected dramatic increases in oxygen the deeper they went. So they checked to see if there was some kind of life responsible for it, but it quickly proved that life was not doing this, though it was using it. And now to the nodules. These are weird in their own right. So the nodules are known as polymetallic or manganese nodules, and we're going down a serious rabbit hole here. So these things form when a shark's tooth or some shards of a shell or any kind of nucleus serves as a seed for manganese and cobalt and other desirable metals to precipitate out and cling to whatever the nucleus is. Not that dissimilar to a pearl, though not as attractive. Those metals have been known to be there for a while, and there have been efforts to explore the option of mining them for their metal content for many years. But there was also a shenanigan here, perhaps one of the largest shenanigans the US government ever did during the entirety of the Cold War. So what happened is that the Soviet Union had a submarine accident that resulted in the catastrophic loss of all hands, and the sub itself in 1968. The US wanted to get a look at this submarine, K-129, when it sank in extremely deep water in the Pacific. That required an enormous ship to try to recover any wreckage, and the Soviets were certainly going to notice such a ship very easily. So the US employed Howard Hughes, of all people, and built that giant ship, known as the Glomar Explorer, now scrapped, and they cooked up a cover story involving prospecting for manganese nodules, and secretly recovered part of the submarine. Not the entire thing, as they had hoped, for study. And buried some recovered human remains at sea with military honors and a Soviet naval ensign, and even the Soviet Union's national anthem, by the United States in 1974, all under the cover of looking for these nodules. And it wasn't the only time something like this happened. When Robert Ballard found the Titanic, the US Navy had funded that expedition so long as he checked on the status of two US nuclear submarines that had been lost. But back to the dark oxygen. It was initially unclear how the chemistry of these nodules could be producing the oxygen, but they seemed the likely culprit somehow. Initially, radioactive decay was advanced as splitting water molecules, but this was not the case. It was also not due to oxygen-containing minerals decaying and releasing it. It turns out that an effect was known about the manganese nodules, that they were sometimes referred to as batteries in rocks. If you take a battery, just a common AA, and put it in salt water, it will bubble and produce hydrogen and oxygen because the electricity splits the water molecules through electrolysis. The nodules can do this too. It appeared that's what the nodules were doing, especially when grouped together acting like batteries. But hidden in this is a certain potential that actually deals directly with abiogenesis, or at least what happened afterwards. The consensus viewpoint has been that complex life evolved only after photosynthesis appears with the cyanobacteria, oxygenating everything. But if you already have oxygen-rich environments in certain places like the deep ocean before that oxygenation event affecting the atmosphere, then what does that mean? Could complex life have arisen before we thought it did? The fossil record is really incomplete, almost non-existing for certain earlier periods, and we just don't know. That is now an open mystery due to this finding. But there is another question, a really big one. Since we're dealing with a geologic process forming these nodules, then you don't need biology for this process to happen. Just some kind of seed to start the nodule. A pebble or whatever will do. And if you have the right dissolved metals in the water, which most of the solar system should have, then this process of nodule formation could be happening in the oceans of Europa, Enceladus, and the other ice shell moons. So long as that ocean has direct contact with the rock ocean floor, with no layer of some type of ice intervening and insulating it, a known possibility. This would mean that moons like Europa have a ready method of oxygenating their oceans. It's always been assumed that any life we might find at Europa or Enceladus would be microbial and anaerobic, with complex life seeming unlikely to have a driver without oxygen from photosynthesis. But if you can have deep ocean oxygen without photosynthesis, just the right geology, then complex life existing in the oceanic ice shell moons comes on the table. This has two levels, and it's spooky. The first is that there could be an unknown, complex ecosystem under the ice of Europa. Macrofauna. That could entail many different kinds of aquatic species. Think things something like jellyfish, fish, octopus, and space sharks, analogs. But very alien and very different, right on our doorstep. Bioluminescence? We have no idea. And we have a lot of chances for this. There are numerous ice shell moons and like minor planets in the solar system. Titan, Oberon, Ganymede, Callisto, Pluto, any number of unknown Kuiper Belt objects, the list goes on and on. They could all be producing oxygenated oceans under the ice that could harbor far more than microbes, because Earth is doing it in its own oceans. And it goes much further. Ice shell moons very likely pervade the universe. If we have so many, then they could be everywhere and vastly outnumber large planets like Earth. Well, what could the limit of this be? It's chilling. There doesn't appear to be a limit. Could an intelligence arise in an environment like this? With enough oxygen, it very well may. Could it ever leave its ice shell and venture into space? It's difficult to say, but possible that such an intelligence might not even know space exists. All they would see is a sky wall made of ice, stuck in an ocean where creating technology does not seem like it would be easy. Even just smelting metals is a problem, but it's worse in that your ready source of metals is also what's creating your oxygen. So mine the metals too much and you go extinct. And this leads us to a new solution to the Fermi paradox. All complex civilizations that arise in ice shell environments go extinct upon reaching technology because they suffocate themselves in a far worse situation than fossil fuel use. Or if they behave responsibly and live within their means, then they never gain the ability to leave their ice shell. Ice shell moons and planets aren't as affected by the type of star they are around. A red dwarf should have no problem because the ice would protect the ocean below. But it's not looking good for surface habitability around red dwarfs. Truly Earth-like planets are dropping off the table for these stars because of their violent nature. and the project to characterize the planets around TRAPPIST-1, a red dwarf, so far is showing that those planets have no atmospheres. Though that project using JWST is not finished, so it's still a bit premature. And we're still awaiting the results of the best candidate planet in that system, but we'll probably know soon. That would leave type G and K for Earth-like planets, so the pool is shrinking, and it may simply be that surface habitable worlds are the exception, potentially a very rare one, not the rule for life and even civilizations. And if those civilizations cannot persist technologically in an aquatic environment, then it's no wonder we aren't seeing anyone. We're too far from anyone with a planet like ours, and the life we are close to is trapped, or worse. It caused its own extinction the moment it hit manganese nodule mining. I must admit, I did not expect a Fermi Paradox solution to present itself to me out of this story, and I delayed this video while I thought it through, but there it is. And it keeps going. A 2013 survey showed that almost half of the documented marine megafauna in the area of the ocean in question, basically all the ones you can see with your eyes without magnification, can only be found on or around these nodules. They are already abodes of megafauna life, but they are also extremely valuable for their metals, which are what we happen to use for our phones, batteries, solar energy, and so on. And we also happen to be running out of sources for all of these rare earth metals, which means we will need to mine the deep sea and risk depleting our own supply of manganese nodules and eventually causing major environmental issues and even extinctions. Unusually troubling, this one, and I must admit, I did not see this solution coming, and I do not think anyone else did either. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently lightening it up and getting misty-eyed and nostalgic over the oxygen. Oxygen is such a great chum and element. Unlike boron, and be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.